The last time journalist and author George Megalogenis went on a book tour in 2012, Kevin Rudd was launching his first challenge to Julia Gillard's prime ministership. So it's fitting that he launches his new book, Australia's Second Chance, What Our History Tells Us About Our Future, a week after Malcolm Turnbull rolled Tony Abbott for the top job. In this book, George argues Australia has enjoyed prosperity during periods of strong migration, and the bus have coincided with the closing of the door to new migrants. He says Australia now has its second chance to prosper, and success will depend in part on whether we welcome new arrivals. George Megalogenis joins me in the breakfast studios. Hello, George.
Fran, good morning.
Before I get to your book, can I ask you about current events? Because we do have a new Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, from the moderate wing of the Liberal Party. We have a new Treasurer, Scott Morrison, from the Conservative wing. What does history tell us about the likely success of that relationship? You've been watching things for a long time.
Yeah, I think there's a hopefully, and you don't want to put this politically, you want to put this in a policy term, hopefully there will be some tension between the two of them. Because the most creative partnerships, Prime Minister and Treasurer, the gold standard being Hawke and Keating, and then Howard and Costello, there was a bit of niggle between the Prime Minister and the Treasurer. So you got the idea that at some point, there were at least two grown-ups in the government having an argument about policy. Now, what we've seen the last couple of governments, and no disrespect at all to Wayne Swan or to Joe Hockey, but the Prime Minister, Rudd and Swan, Gillard and Swan, and then the combination of Abbott and Hockey were essentially a repetition of the same political character type.
The Hockey and Abbott often sort of came out with competing statements.
Yeah, but that's because they couldn't get the line of the morning right. But in terms of what it is, what the agenda was, you never got a sense that there was an argument with them over the substance of what the government was doing.
So you think it's good if Scott Morrison ends up arguing with Malcolm Turnbull?
Well, I just think, and Malcolm Turnbull's already in a way, he's led with his chin on this. He wants to restore proper cabinet government, and proper cabinet government is about having a decent argument behind closed doors. Sometimes those arguments will creep out into the public sphere, but I think that is a healthy thing. Over the last three prime ministers, and this is obviously a comment on the way they govern, not on the individuals themselves, there was such an emphasis on the politics and surviving the day, and the Prime Minister's office was structured more politically than previous governments. So even to the extent that the Chief of Staff is a political operative, not a person with a policy or public service background, which used to be the tradition from Curtin and Chifley's day. So hopefully, if he's true to his word, but being true to his word means he might actually have some difficult times as Prime Minister. If he's got a treasurer with perhaps not a competing agenda in the sense that he's out to undermine him, but they're having a decent argument about what's right for the country.
It's 18 past eight. Our guest is journalist and author George Megalogenis. George, last time we spoke, it was after the launch of your last book, called The Australian Moment. This book is called Australia's Second Chance. Have we missed our moment already?
I think the moment hasn't passed yet. You could sort of get hung up on the titles. By Second Chance, and in a funny way, this book is a bit of a prequel to The Australian Moment, because The Australian Moment has a very, very tight boundary, but sort of looking at the way Australia grew up over the last 20 or 30 years and used the frame of global shocks and how we responded to global shocks. Because most of the politics, even politics that you and I have covered over the decades, tends to be very, very Australia-focused. But a lot of the events that leaders and oppositions have to, governments and oppositions have to respond to, a sense are preset by global circumstance. So that's what The Australian Moment was about. But the fact that we were back on top, number one, I needed, I couldn't answer the question I left hanging in the last book without a sensible tool, which is history. You can't really do it any other way. You need to look at the last time we were number one, and basically what the choices that confronted us was when we were last number one, and we made some very, very bad decisions at the end of the 19th century. We're the world's richest people. Uninterrupted growth spurt. I mean, there was obviously recessions in those days, but we were on top of the global income ladder, the measure of GDP per capita. So the world's richest people, and we were acknowledged at the time in all the media at the time and all the academic work at the time, what academic work there would have been in the 19th century, from about 1852 to 1891. That is quite a long winning streak. But then we blew our brains out. And for the next 50 years, we were one of the worst performed countries on the planet.
So, and your thesis on this is interesting because you say that, to blow the brains out, as you say, was to some degree the result of the White Australia policy or the closed door policy. So you make a link of Australia's boom times and times of openness, great migration.
And openness. Not just in migration, also there were no tariff walls up at the time.
Yeah.
So basically free trade in goods, in services and in people. And that country, although a collection of colonies in those days, but they were referring to themselves as Australians, certainly by the 1850s and 1860s, and very conscious by the 1880s that they are the world's richest people. When we were, whether we're on our best behaviour or our worst behaviour, we'll leave that thing to one side because all countries have their contradictions. But we shone brighter than any other country in the world during this first very intense period of globalisation, the 19th century. And so the repetition of history, if you're looking for the repetition of history, this is a very, very open phase of globalisation we've been going through the last 20 or 30 years. It shouldn't actually be a surprise that Australia's back on top.
But in some ways, let's look at the comparisons. Yes, time of free trade, open trade, and Australia has been at the forefront of pushing for that, no doubt about that, with APEC and in the WTO. But can the same be said about our migration policies, our attitudes to others coming here? It's been a time of great tension in that field.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to explore this topic. In fact, I went in assuming nothing because I didn't want to be writing a book that dealt with migration in the typical way past books have been written about migration, which is you pick your favourite tribe and you write everyone else's story around it. I mean, and these are beautiful stories you can tell about individual groups that have settled.
And you've got a personal story.
A personal story. I've sort of disclose it, but I disclose it through parents and grandparents and great-grandparents. I sort of leave myself out of it for this one. But when I looked at the data, and trust me, I spent a lot of time, this is one of the reasons why I left journalism, so I wouldn't die wondering about a book like this. I looked at all the data, and there's pretty good data now which gives global comparisons of living standards, GDP and the like. And Australia's periods of strongest growth correlated. There's no other factor that actually explains it, correlated with migration, with mass migration. So that's the first, the economic point. The sort of cultural and the political point that there's always been resistance to the new arrival and there's always been tension. Now, the tension I always assumed, and this is one thing I've absolutely changed my view on this having read the record, I assume that resistance to migration tends to follow the unemployment rate up. So people are less likely to accept migrants when the unemployment rate's up. But the thing is, and this is the sort of the lesson of the past, we get tense at the tops of booms as well when we're actually well off because we're afraid that the next person who comes is going to take it from us. So this is almost a foundational impulse in Australia.
And you sense this nervousness now, don't you, we're waiting for the fall?
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I had to go back to the past. You can write predictions, you could do knee-jerk commentary, but without the tool of the past, you can't look at the good and the bad side of Australia.
Can I just ask you briefly and finally, in the book too, obviously written before the leadership change, you say our current narrow political class poses the greatest threat to our second chance for prosperity. What do you mean by that?
I think what we've observed the last 8 to 10 years. See, no disrespect to the Howard government because it's got a very, very substantial legacy. But the final term of the Howard government, pretty much from the moment John Howard tried to buy that extra term of office, you know, and it was chasing Menzies' record for longevity.
When the middle class welfare
went up. And then Kevin Rudd comes to power, he couldn't be focused on any particular issue. Gillard had a lot of captain's calls, Tony Abbott had a lot of captain's calls. Politics has become so short-term in its focus, and we've sort of seen it in the revolving door of leadership, it's actually the wrong approach to what our challenges and opportunities are. We need some long-term planning.
Thinking.
I know that sense. It's almost like a cliche, but the thing is you can't handle the next 10 or 20 or 30 years of Australia's prosperity. You can't deliver it without thinking like people did, say, after the Second World War.
Well, next time we meet, I hope that doesn't mean you've written a new book in a couple of years' time and we're at the cusp of a leadership change again. Let's see how the long-term thinking and planning goes. George, thanks very much for joining us.
Much appreciated, Fran. Thank
George
you.
Megalogenis, journalist and author, currently on a national tour to promote his new book, Australia's Second Chance, cunningly timed to coincide with yet another leadership change.